This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Is the coronavirus making a comeback in Massachusetts? There were nearly 500 new cases of COVID-19 confirmed in the state over the weekend. And the percentage of positive tests, one of the state's key measures, has ticked upward in the last several days after holding steady earlier this month. Now, in just a minute, we're going to take your questions about the coronavirus with two local doctors. You call. We do everything we can to answer your questions. Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. But first, let's take a look at the numbers. With us to do that is WBUR Common Health Editor Carrie Goldberg. Welcome back, Carrie.
Thank you, Tiziana. I miss you.
I miss you too. It's great to have you back on. Although I have mixed feelings about that because we're having you back on because we have this word up coming up with our coronavirus yes. numbers. And I don't like that word when it comes to the coronavirus, but we said if the numbers went up, we would talk about it. We would pay attention. So how much up are they and how concerned should we be?
Well, I think maybe rather than concerned, vigilant is more the appropriate word at this point. You know, the state is keeping a very close eye on those numbers, and you can see the state's willingness to act to keep them down in those strict new travel regulations that take effect this Saturday. I'd say the bottom line right now is that our numbers are still nice and low, especially compared to this spring here and to the poor other parts of the country where there are surges right now. We're averaging somewhere between 200 or closer to 300 reported new confirmed and probable cases a day.
So, Carrie, I get it that that is much better than it was in the spring, but also not the bar we want to have long term. Yeah. And that above 200 number is more than it was for a while, right?
It's a bit more. I mean, in late June, early July, the total new cases were tending to hover closer to 230 or 240 a day. More recently, we're seeing closer to 270, 280 a day. But Tiziana, to put that in perspective, at our peak in mid to late April, we were seeing more like 2,200 new cases a day, so nearly 10 times as much. And if you want the visual on this, there are some really beautiful graphs of COVID in Massachusetts at WBUR.org. And to me, what they mostly look like is a giant mountain that plateaued in late April, early May, and then it heads downward all through May. And since June, it's been almost entirely flat, except for just maybe a bit of a gentle rise in mid-July. So it's like we're not even foothills. We're kind of on a plain with just a tiny bit of rise.
So we can continue to watch those numbers. WBUR does it every day, and we always have charts available. This rise, is it concentrated in certain places? I mean, do we know what's behind it?
Well, somewhat. You know, we are solidly in phase three of the reopening. Restaurants are allowing indoor dining, museums and gyms and movie theaters are open. But Governor Baker is pointing to a lack of adherence to the guidelines rather than reopening itself. And, you know, we have been hearing about some concerning clusters of cases, including there was a party in Chatham in early July that actually led several Cape Cod restaurants to shut down because workers were infected. The news today is that 8 lifeguards in Falmouth tested positive, apparently after a party they attended. And Bay State Medical Center in Springfield is reporting an outbreak of 36 people, 23 of them employees, 13 of them patients. And they're saying it stemmed from an employee's trip to a hot spot. And speaking of hot spots, by the way, we've got more. Governor Baker has added Agawam, Brockton, Methuen, Randolph, Revere, Springfield, Taunton, and Worcester to the list of places where there will be extra free testing because their positive test rates are on the high side. They're averaging 2.3% compared to the latest state average, which is 1.9%.
So it seems like a really good time to remember the basics, right? And go back to basics. Yep. Masks, hand washing, social distancing. It is encouraging that the word gentle rise, I'll go back to the term you used, can be encouraging. I did read that we have some concerns from the medical community about whether or not we're behind this curve or what we should do about it.
Yes, and I think those concerns are very worth listening to, especially when they're coming from the president of the Mass Medical Society. Here's Dr. David Rossman. He says he's urging the state to consider slowing the reopening in view of these latest numbers.
We don't know for sure that the cases are truly increasing or that it is statistically important. And that, I think, is why I use the word consider, because we don't know for sure where we are. But I think it's worthy to consider action, because I'd rather act too early than too late.
And he says the biggest motivation here is kids.
I see getting kids back to school, K through 12, as a goal. And the way to achieve that goal is through sacrifice. And that sacrifice is decreasing those things that we might want to do, but probably are risks and for transmission of the virus.
And he does also say, though, that, you know, state policy aside, it just will go a very long way. As you said, if people can just resist complacency, maintain vigilance with masks and social distancing and hand washing. And, you know, he has this great line. He says, so many people feel done with COVID, but that doesn't mean COVID is done with them. And just one last word from Mayor Walsh today. He had a very memorable line. He said something like, if COVID-19 were a football game, we're only at about halftime, which I must say made my heart sink, but I guess it's good perspective, right?
Yeah. And Carrie, Common Health Editor Carrie Goldberg, Carrie, great to have you on today to put the back in perspective for us. I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's turn to your questions. What do you want to know now about the coronavirus? What's on your mind? What new information are you trying to process? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Here to answer your questions today and talk more with us now about what's happening in Massachusetts overall, we have two local doctors who have joined us before. First is Dr. Cassandra Pierre, infectious disease physician and assistant professor of medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine. Dr. Pierre is also medical director of public health programs and associate hospital epidemiologist at Boston Medical Center. Welcome back, Dr. Pierre.
Lovely to be here. Thank you.
And Dr. Shira Derone, infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. Dr. Derone, welcome back to you as well.
Great to be back.
So I think the two of you heard, I think, the conversation with Carrie Goldberg just now. We kind of talked about how to feel about these numbers and how much the change is. Are you worried? Has anything changed in your hospital in the past few days? Dr. Derone?
I tend to agree with Carrie that we need to be vigilant but not panicked about the slight rise in the percent positivity. It's still well within the range of, you know, Governor Baker's plan in terms of reopening. And what we need to do is not necessarily roll back reopening, but keep our foot on the gas in terms of that vigilance.
Dr. Pierre, is that how you feel about it too?
I agree that this uptick might just be a blip, and so it is important to put that into perspective. It's hard not to feel a little uneasy when we see massive surges happening in different places in the country, and I certainly think it makes sense to view this as an endurance sport, to not become too complacent, and to continue to monitor the numbers while we do the things that we need to do to keep them under control. Here at our hospital, we have not seen a blip. We haven't seen any changes in what we've been looking at very closely, which is COVID positivity. But we certainly have seen a bit of a rise in certain populations, the major one being younger people, so people under the age of 29.
So I'm going to go to the phones in a minute, but before I do, I know you both just heard Carrie Goldberg talking about the Massachusetts Medical Society kind of urging the state to consider a rollback of some parts of the reopening. How, you know, we do 3-day and 7-day average tracking on this data. How to know, I mean, that's lag indicators, right? That's information that's already come and we're interpreting it now. When the right time and if there's a right time to roll back, and how to not be too late on that as you're looking at numbers that have already happened.
Well, Dr. Derone. I think one thing that's important to note is that we're not doing nothing in the last couple of days. What we know has changed is that the governor has enacted a much stricter travel order. And that's really a key response to what may be driving the slight uptick in numbers, which is the travelers from hotspots. So I think what we've seen over the last couple of months is that we're capable of doing reopening the right way, and that we can easily get derailed by the other parts of the country and people, you know, crossing the borders. And so this travel order, really, which is stronger than it's ever been before, has the potential to get that right under control.
And just to give our listeners a little more information on that, it was last Friday, Governor Baker, a few of the highlights. You have to fill out a traveler form on the website if you're coming into the state from any except eight accepted states. You have to quarantine for 14 days or present a negative COVID test from the previous 72 hours. And there can be a fine of $500 a day for failure to comply. I want to jump over to the phones, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to get some questions. We've got Chris from Hopkinton. Chris, go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm curious to know what you all make of the article in the current Atlantic that talks about the fact that all of the cleaning and sanitizing of surfaces that we're doing is probably not as necessary as we think because the virus doesn't seem to be transferred that way.
So Chris, let's
go of that neuroticness a little bit, or
yeah, let's ask Dr. Pierre about that. But we have one other question on a similar subject, so let me get them both in, and then we'll turn to Dr. Pierre. Thanks for that, Chris. We've also got Susan in Canton. Susan, go ahead.
Okay. Well, my husband and I are both in our 70s. We've been very careful, and I'm just wondering if we have to continue to sanitize our mail, our groceries, our newspaper. It would be nice to be able to stop.
So right on that same vein, Dr. Pierre, do you know the article that Chris was asking about in The Atlantic?
Unfortunately, I have to admit I haven't read that article, but we certainly have been discussing the relative role of environmental contamination in COVID-19 infection. And I would have to agree that although we still think there probably is a small role to play, there have been figures that environmental contamination probably only accounts for 6% or less of COVID-19 infection. Now, that's not to say that it can never or does not happen. We also have other information that shows that COVID-19 can persist on surfaces, plastic, metal surfaces for long periods of time. And so while I think it's reasonable, especially when in common areas, to ensure that you are wiping down things that might have come into contact, especially with the respiratory secretions of others, in common spaces, I think that probably there's less of a role of wiping down things like your newspaper or, you know, maybe even your groceries. I know some places have allowed people to bring back their own grocery bags rather than the previous ban on that. But I think continued vigilance is important. I think the relative risk of these surfaces is probably been overstated earlier on in the epidemic. So
let's stay with this, Dr. Durham, for just a minute longer, because I can give you a little bit of the both of you, the article. Derek Thompson wrote it. It's in The Atlantic. He is criticizing a term he calls hygiene theater, saying that kind of these constant deep cleans are misdirected. Here's a quote. Quote, COVID-19 has reawakened America's spirit of misdirected anxiety, inspiring businesses and families to obsess over risk reduction rituals that make us feel safer, but don't actually do much to reduce risk, even as more dangerous activities are still allowed, end quote. Now, that seems to be shooting further than what you're saying, Dr. Pierre. You're being, it sounds like to me, more cautious than that. But having had a chance to just put a little bit out there, since Chris asked about that article in particular, let me give you a chance to add on, Dr. Durone.
Well, I mean, I think he has a point, certainly. When we focus on that, we might lose focus on the things that are well proven to decrease transmission, the distancing, the masking. And so I think that it's a fair point. The CDC had put out a couple months ago, maybe now, its statement about how surfaces don't play a huge role in the transmission, that we really have to focus on that close personal contact. The breathing and coughing in each other's face is really going to be the primary mode of transmission. And right now, it's a statistics game. You know, if a very small percentage of people acquire the virus from a surface, And we have a very small percentage of people in our state with COVID-19, then, you know, you're really, your energy being placed towards sanitizing mail and grocery bags and things like that is probably not the place to put it.
All right, let's grab another question. Thanks to both of you on those two. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Alex is on the line from Lancaster. Alex, what's your question?
Hi, I was wondering if there's any merit to masks or any other products that with, say, copper or other metals with antimicrobial features, I suppose.
Alex, you cut out there for a second. I think what you asked is masks or other products that are infused with copper or other antimicrobials. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, great. Let's go back to our panelists. Dr. Pierre.
So I'm not aware of any studies looking at masks that have been infused with copper, although we know that it is and it has antimicrobial properties, and it certainly has been used in many places, including in healthcare settings, in hospital rooms, to reduce the risk and the transmission of healthcare-acquired infections. However, you know, presumably, and depending on how it's manufactured, it adds to weight. It might add to discomfort for the mask. And we actually know that what we have been using so far, at least for surgical grade masks, and in some instances for cloth masks, masks that are made with cotton, and some which have maybe even an interior of silk or other elements that might repel the virus through electrostatic charge, we have a really good recipe, I think, for things that work in terms of limiting exposure and limiting filtration of COVID. That being said, I certainly would be interested in innovations in mask use. We're always looking for bigger and better, but I'm not aware of masks that have been manufactured with metal properties as an added benefit. Also keeping in mind that copper surfaces have really just been utilized for the benefit of preventing the transmission of those healthcare acquired infections I mentioned from contact transmission. And we've already kind of decreased, we've already talked about how we needed to have a lower sense of risk for that in order to attune ourselves to the more important risk of respiratory spread. And so we certainly don't have any indication that it would be helpful for reducing respiratory-borne spread of SARS-CoV-2.
So, thanks for that, Dr. Pierre. Dr. Daron, I'm going to turn to you. I have to do this one because it's been pretty high profile in the last 24 hours. President Trump yesterday retweeted out information on a video from Breitbart that showed a woman who identified herself as a doctor at a press conference saying that masks are unnecessary and that hydroxychloroquine, a drug that treats lupus and malaria, are quote unquote, the cure. Twitter, Facebook, YouTube removed the video. So let's review. The medical consensus is that masks are necessary. And what about hydroxychloroquine?
The medical consensus currently is that the risks of hydroxychloroquine exceed the benefits, and it is no longer a part of the treatment guidelines.
Okay, and where should people be turning for the most reliable and reputable information on the virus? Because stuff abounds out there.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Places like this, right here, right now, and places like, obviously, the medical literature, the CDC website, the WHO website, and the state health department websites.
Dr. Pierre, it's warm out there. We've been talking about beaches here on air the last couple of weeks. There's news out of the Cape today of some lifeguards down on the Cape testing positive for the virus. People want to be together in this heat. Just remind us basic guidance when you are gathering with other people.
Absolutely. This is actually a really important question to me because I know that Chatham is not unique. On my way home from work yesterday, I passed by through a block party and I slow to a crawl the way you do when you are evaluating an accident because 40 to 50% of the people on either side were not wearing masks. But in answer to your question, yes, it is still part of our recommendation, even during the summer, even in the heat and our collective fatigue around social distancing, to continue to wear masks, surgical or cloth masks when out and about, to continue to physically distance 6 feet apart from those who you've not quarantined with. And to, of course, not go out if you are feeling ill and or if you have been exposed to someone who's been COVID positive and are awaiting your own test results. Those are all still the bedrocks of our infection prevention techniques, for which it is important really for all of us to continue to uphold, even though we feel like we need a reprieve. Again, this is an endurance sport, and any breaks in our barriers will unfortunately potentially lead to increased number of cases in those clusters.
And Dr. Durone, in our last half a minute or so, we talked at the top about the new travel restrictions from the governor. Lots of concern about college students soon coming in from all over the country. Are the restrictions we have in place, if they're practiced appropriately, enough to keep us from having a surge here in the Commonwealth?
Yeah, I hope so. The colleges in Massachusetts have really been working together and have been very strategic in their plans for reopening. All of them, as far as I know, have a testing plan, and so that should be able to overcome the logistics of the travel order. So they're partnering with the Broad, and there's a plan to do testing upon arrival with a quick turnaround. So they should be able to allow for those quarantines to happen and the testing to happen so that kids can get back to school.
All right, and that's Dr. Shira Durone of Tufts Medical Center and Dr. Cassandra Pierre of the Boston University School of Medicine. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Take care.